Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Liam and I have been planning the trip for months. Just the two of us. No girlfriends, no responsibilities. Just a long overdue weekend to disconnect. We picked the cheapest cabin we could find, tucked in the tree-thick edge of some forgotten lake up north. Fishing, drinks, maybe a little weed. The kind of lazy, directionless break we both pretended we didn't desperately need. I'd just quit my job. Burnout. Liam's engagement had fallen apart 2 weeks before the wedding. We didn't talk about either. The next morning, I woke up early. Couldn't sleep. Liam followed me down to the dock, bleary-eyed, both of us clutching mugs of awful instant coffee. That's when we saw it. Across the water, barely visible through the fog. A house. A full-on house. Two stories, pale siding, sharp roof, perfectly symmetrical, and definitely not there the day before. Maybe we were too hungover to notice, Liam said. Maybe someone built it overnight, I joked. But the chill on my spine didn't match my tone. We watched it for a while. It didn't move, flicker or fade. It just sat there, still and waiting. We couldn't see a dock or a path leading to it. It was just there. Eventually, curiosity got the better of us. We climbed into the old metal rowboat the cabin provided, oar squeaking with every pull. The lake was calm. The surface didn't ripple. Even the fog seemed thick and deliberate, as if it wanted to hide something. As we rowed, I remember thinking, maybe we're about to ruin someone's very private weekend. The fog parted like a curtain the closer we got. It sat dead center on the water. No docks, no stilts, no visible support. Just a two-story colonial-style house perfectly above the glassy reflection, as if it had been cut and pasted into the world without explanation. Liam was the first to say it. There's no foundation. I nodded. There's no reason it should be standing. We circled it in the boat, but there was no clear entry point. Just still water and the low whisper of wind. And then, miraculously, we spotted a flat wooden platform hidden by the shadows beneath the water, in front of the porch steps, a place just wide enough to climb onto. We tied off and stepped onto the platform. It didn't creak or sway. It felt impossibly solid. The front door opened with the first twist of the knob. Inside was warmth. I don't mean just temperature. It felt like a loved home, like someone had been expecting us. Lamps glowed in every room, soft orange glow washing over clean furniture and polished hardwood. A fire crackled in a stone hearth, despite no visible chimney outside. The smell of fresh bread hung in the air. The dining table was set for two, full plates already prepared. Roast chicken, vegetables, mashed potatoes, still steaming like they'd just been prepared. Our stomachs growled in unison, but neither of us dared touch it. Maybe this is one of those theme rentals, Liam said, like a weird Airbnb experience. I was too stunned to respond. The place was stunning, leagues above the glorified shed we'd rented. We moved from room to room, quiet now. Every bed was made, closets full of clothes, neutral, unlabeled, but folded with care. Framed photos hung along the hallways, but the faces were impossible to make out, like they'd been smudged or captured mid-motion, familiar and alien at the same time. Everything had that once-loved feeling, old but clean, used but treasured. The kitchen was fully stocked, the fridge cold and humming, cabinets filled with dry goods, even a fruit bowl on the counter, apples waxy and perfect. We stood in the living room, surrounded by silence and comfort. "This place is nicer than our cabin," Liam said, "by a mile. No mold, no wood rot, no smell like a raccoon died under the floorboards," I added. We laughed, but the feeling crept over us that we didn't belong. This was someone's place, and we were walking it like a public space. We didn't stay long. The air inside that house had a way of numbing time, like everything outside the walls didn't exist. But when I checked my watch, nearly 2 hours had passed. The food on the table hadn't cooled. Liam whistled low. "All right, enough ghost real estate. Let's head back before dark." "Yeah," I said, though my voice didn't sound convincing, even to me. I didn't want to admit how the place made me feel. Safe. Almost hypnotically so. Like leaving would be wrong somehow. He was already at the door. "You coming?" "Yeah, right behind you." He stepped out first, boots thumping lightly on the wooden platform. The sound was grounding, real. Then I tried to follow, and hit something that wasn't there. The air had hardened, not like wind or resistance. It was like walking face first into glass. My whole body jolted backward, my breath caught in my throat. "What the hell?" I pressed my hands forward. They flattened against nothing. The doorframe was right in front of me, open, but I couldn't cross it. It was like the house itself was pushing back. "Matt?" Liam's voice floated through the fog, muffled. It hit the barrier again, harder this time. "I can't get out." "What are you talking about? I can't get out." Then everything changed. Every light in the house went out all at once. The warmth bled away. The fire hissed out mid-crackle. In the sudden silence, the sound of my own breathing filled the room, quick, sharp, and too loud. The moonlight filtered through the windows in weak, silver ribbons, illuminating motes of dust that hadn't been there a moment ago. "Liam?" My voice sounded small. No answer. Just the distant, rhythmic lap of water against the foundation, a sound that somehow felt closer than it should. "Liam!" I shouted, panic rising. My heartbeat thudded in my ears. Footsteps thudded across the porch, then the door swung wide. Light poured back in around him like someone had hit a switch. The fire roared again, the air warmed. Everything was normal. Liam stood in the doorway, eyebrows raised. "What the hell's your problem?" I stumbled forward, gripping the frame. "I couldn't leave. The air, it..." I stopped, realizing how insane I sounded. He looked past me, scanning the bright, cozy room. "You sure you didn't just freak yourself out? Man, you've been jumpy ever since we got here." "I'm serious," I said, shaking my head. "It was like hitting a wall." He chuckled uneasily, clapping my shoulder. "Yeah, a spooky invisible wall in the middle of a magic lake. Maybe ease up on the edibles, huh? But even as he laughed, I caught it. The way his eyes darted toward the open door behind him, then back to me. He didn't say it out loud, but I could tell. He felt it too. The air outside was heavy, the kind of stillness that waits. We kept testing it, thinking maybe it was just a fluke, some bizarre sensory thing, or maybe we were overtired. But no. Every time we tried to leave together, shoulder to shoulder, we both hit it. That invisible wall, like the air had been vacuum sealed. No resistance, no sound, just solid nothing. The first time it happened to both of us at once, we looked at each other and said nothing, just backed up, back into the house. So we tried splitting it up again. I left first, made it to the porch. He followed, blocked, and the moment I crossed the threshold, the lights flicked back on, warm, cozy, like nothing had happened. Then we reversed it. He went out fine. I followed, blocked again. It became clear. You could leave, but only if someone else stayed behind. One must remain. I don't know how the house enforced that rule, but it did. Every single time, no matter how we tried to game it. Eventually, we stopped trying and sat in the living room, surrounded by ticking clocks and too perfect furniture. The crackling fireplace didn't burn down, and the food on the table never got cold. It was all still, waiting. Liam was the one who spoke first. "I'll go," he said. "I'll get help. I'll be fast." I didn't like it, but he was already walking to the door. And as he crossed the threshold, the light didn't just fade. It curdled. Warm gold drained into thin, grey moonlight that coated everything like dust. The fire died without smoke, the smell of bread soured to something metallic and old. The temperature dropped 5 degrees and kept falling. I tried turning on the lamps. Nothing. Switches clicked, bulbs stayed dead. I even tried the lighter from the kitchen drawer, but when I flicked it, nothing sparked. So, I started walking. At first, everything looked the same, but age seemed to infect the place. The once pristine wooden ornaments peeled and flaked into husks that only resembled what they once were. Then I opened a door that should have led to the hallway and found a staircase, narrow, pitch black. I didn't go down. I closed the door, took a breath, opened it again. The hallway was back. I stood there for a while, just breathing. Listening. The sounds came slowly, like the house had been holding its breath and finally let it out. Soft creaks, then the hum of something shifting, almost organic, like bones realigning in the walls. There was movement too. At first, just flickers at the edges of my vision. A shadow passing behind a doorway I hadn't opened, something crawling along the ceiling, fast enough to make me question if I saw anything at all. I turned corners that should have led to the kitchen and ended up back in the foyer. Doors led to wrong places, windows showed only fog. Eventually, I gave up trying to map it. I picked a room, a small guest bedroom I hadn't seen before, and shut the door behind me. It was bitterly cold. I climbed into bed fully dressed, clutching the thick covers to my chin. I heard breathing, not mine, slow, deep, rasping, somewhere in the walls. I heard scratching too, nails or claws dragging, pacing. Once something brushed my legs under the covers, slow and deliberate. I didn't move, didn't breathe. I just waited. No noise after that. Just silence, so complete, it buzzed in my ears. I don't remember falling asleep. I must have passed out from exhaustion. I woke up hours later, cramped, teeth chattering, heart pounding, like I hadn't rested at all. The room was darker than before, and the door I came in through was gone. Now, on the other side of the room. I stretched off, ready to look around, and felt my stomach curl. I was starving, not just hungry. It was like something had reached inside during the night and scooped out more than food. The lights were still dead. The fireplace remained cold ash, the food from before gone, missing, like it had never existed. I tried the taps. Nothing came out. No hiss, no drip, just silence. The windows still showed the lake, fog blanketed and still, but the sky hung in perpetual dusk. The moon hovered low, never rising, never falling. The shadows stayed long, stretched. At first I thought a day had passed, then two. Now I wasn't sure if time was moving at all. I started keeping track. I used the steak knife to carve a tally into the kitchen table every time I slept. There were 5 lines now, maybe 6. One of them was deeper, fresher, but I didn't remember making it. It didn't let me rest anymore. Every time I closed my eyes, I felt it watching. Not from the darkness, but everywhere. Like the walls were its skin, and the beams were its spine. I could hear it breathing through the grain of the floorboards, smell it, sweet, wet rot, even when I pressed a pillow over my face. At first I stayed in one room, then I tried moving, hoping to outrun it. But the layout wouldn't stay still. Doors opened at dead ends, staircases twist, mirrors didn't reflect the right version of the room. A facsimile of what the room was meant to be, like it was half guessing. The worst are the rooms I didn't remember entering. I'd blink and be standing in a narrow crawl space, breathing hard, hands scraped raw, like I'd been clawing at the walls. I once woke up inside a closet, curled around a pile of clothing that didn't belong to me. The thing moved differently when I was exhausted. It didn't bang or scream. It stalked. Sometimes I'd hear it just outside the door, slow steps that paused too long. Once I saw a shape under the crack, like something crawling flat-bellied across the hallway, dragging limbs. I locked the door. That night it tapped, slow and patient on the other side, hours of soft tapping just beyond the wood. One night, I found muddy footprints in the kitchen. Small, barefoot, like a child's. They circled the room, then stopped at the base of the bed. I didn't hear it, didn't see it, but it was there, inches from me while I slept. At some point, I lost count of the days. The first few tallies on the table were neat, straight. I even tried marking time by the dim shift of light outside, but that stopped making sense fast. The sky didn't move here. It stayed caught in that same silver half-light. I thought I carved 30 marks, maybe 40, but somewhere in the blur of time, I stopped sleeping, or I started sleeping without knowing. I started scratching marks on the wall instead, just to feel something different, something rough. But even the walls began to reject it. The scratches would vanish when I looked away. One time they came back, but moved higher, too high to reach. The house was keeping its own count. I hadn't eaten in what must have been weeks. My stomach ate constantly, gnawed at itself, no food, no water. But I didn't die. My mouth stayed dry, my lips split, my head spun when I stood too fast. And yet I'd wake up the next morning still alive, still here, still hungry. It wasn't kindness. It was cruelty measured out one tick at a time. It was getting bolder. The first time it touched me, I thought I imagined it. A cold pressure on the back of my neck. But then it brushed my ankle when I hid under the bed. It gripped my arm once while I slept, hard enough to leave finger-shaped bruises. I looked in the mirror and saw no one behind me. Now I heard it breathing at night, not just through the walls or doorway, from my pillow. One day, or whatever day meant, I saw a figure standing just beyond the kitchen doorway, not moving, just watching. It had no face, just the suggestion of one, a dent where a mouth should have been, a shimmer of breath where eyes might blink. I couldn't tell if I'd gone insane, or if insanity would have been a mercy. Then, finally, it cornered me. I was running again, trying to get to the staircase that used to lead to the bedroom. It ended in a wall. When I turned, it was there. It didn't charge at me. It raised a hand, pointed at me. The ceiling bent around it, like gravity itself was drawn to it. I backed into a corner, shaking, whispering anything I could remember. Prayers, apologies, my own name over and over like a shield. It stepped forward, closer. The temperature dropped, my breath hitched and crystallized in the air. It reached out, fingertips about to brush my chest. The light snapped on, warm, full, blinding. The fireplace roared to life, the smell of cinnamon, baking bread. I dropped to my knees, sobbing. The thing was gone. I wasn't alone. "Hey," a voice called. I looked up. My friend stood in the doorway, backlit by the sudden warmth of the house. He was breathing hard, grinning in disbelief, like he'd found me after a long game of hide and seek. "Dude," he said, "you're right." I couldn't speak. My throat felt torn raw. Every inch of my body sore, like I'd been wrung out and left to dry. I pushed myself upright, still on my knees, eyes adjusting to the impossible light. He crossed the room, steadying me by the shoulders. "What the hell happened? I was gone like maybe 2 hours. I called the guy who rented us the cabin, but he had no clue what I was talking about. Said there was no house on the lake. Thought I was messing with him." 2 hours? I croaked. "Yeah, left just past noon. It's not even 3 yet." That hit harder than the cold ever did. I looked in the mirror and hid my reaction to what I saw. I hadn't aged a day. But I'd lived a lifetime. I stared at the fireplace, the plates of food reset perfectly, the soft hum of peace back in the air. I'd carved more than 30 marks on the table. I'd felt my sanity stretch thin. And yet he said, 2 hours. I didn't even argue, just closed my eyes for a moment. Then I turned to him, voice low. "Look, I need to get out of here, just for a little bit. I haven't eaten or slept. I messed up, man." He frowned, suddenly uneasy. "I thought you said we couldn't both leave." "No," I said quickly, "that's not it. We can leave, but not together. One of us has to stay behind. That's the rule." He hesitated. "So, if I stay?" "You'd be fine. I'll row back, grab supplies, maybe talk to someone else, be gone maybe 20 minutes, tops. His eyes flickered toward the door. Seriously, I said, you don't have to do anything, just hang out, enjoy the food here. He gave a weak laugh at that. That's insane, you know that. Yeah, I said, already halfway to the door. But we're dealing with it, right? A pause, then a reluctant nod. All right, go. I didn't look back, didn't check to see if the house dimmed behind me. I just stepped out into the fog, let the door swing shut, and walked down to the boat. The water lapped gently against the boat as I neared the halfway point across the lake. And already, I felt the weight in my chest shift, like something was being peeled off me, layer by layer. I stopped rowing, turned my head. The house sat still on the water, perfectly centered. But the lights, they were gone. The soft golden glow that once made it look like a dream had vanished. Its silhouette stood darker than the mist around it, every window a lifeless square. He was in there now, alone. And I'd known it would happen. I'd let it happen. I dropped the oars, let the boat drift, and tried to convince myself there was still time. Maybe he'd figure a way out. Maybe I was wrong about the rules. Maybe, just maybe, if I waited, he'd be on the porch, waving, laughing, saying, "This place is messed up, man, but I handled it." I waited. I watched. The house remained still, cold, untouched by time or warmth. I rowed the rest of the way in silence. Back in the cabin, everything felt too loud. The creak of the wood, the hum of the refrigerator, the crunch of my footsteps. All too loud after what I'd just left. I tried to eat. The food turned to ash in my mouth. Guilt ripped away any semblance of appetite. I stood by the window, watched the lake, watched the dark shape where the house waited. I told myself I'd go back at sunrise, rest up a bit for my turn back in there. Then I told myself I'd go if the lights came back on. Every hour I checked. Nothing. I went to the dock with the boat ready, hand on the rope, but I didn't untie it. I just stood there, feeling the mist curl around my ankles. And then I started bargaining. Maybe it didn't have to be both of us getting out. Maybe he was okay. Maybe this was just temporary, and when I left, the house would vanish and let him go. Maybe the house only haunted me and was fine for him. I whispered his name once. It caught in my throat like a splinter. The guilt came in waves. Shame, anger, denial. I punched the counter, cursed him for not refusing, cursed myself for asking, cursed the lake, the fog, everything. Then I looked out the window one last time. Still, nothing. That's when I started lying to myself. He'd seen the dark now. He understood. He'd know what I went through. The walls shifting, the breathing, the endless not quite night. And because of that, if I went back, if we traded places again, he'd leave me there. He'd have to. He'd know it's the only way one of us walks away. So maybe leaving now wasn't betrayal. Maybe it was the only way to make sure I survive. That's what I told myself anyway, over and over, until it stopped sounding like cowardice and started sounding like salvation. A second chance. I waited until dusk before packing my bag, 15 minutes, maybe less, just clothes and my phone. At the door, I hesitated, looked back at the half-empty cabin, the lake beyond. Still, no lights, just silence. I whispered, "I'm sorry," though I wasn't sure who I meant it for. Then, I left.